Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 28th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Tony Bazia. He was born in Sudan, the second son of a tribal chief. His strong will, rational thinking, and his interest in helping people have shaped his path, which brought him to the U.S. in 1999 and then to Maine 2.5 years ago. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Bazia.
Thank you.
Can you paint a picture for us describing what your daily life was like as a child in Sudan?
It was kind of opened my mind a little bit according to the background of Arabic nation of Sudan. And it's kind of you're in a different culture of Africa, and you get into our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you're from what is now South Sudan.
Yeah, right now it's South Sudan. It's like North Korea and South Korea.
Yeah.
You can put it that way.
Wow. Hopefully not that much conflict. Mm. can you tell us what your father did as the chief of the Lu tribe?
He almost cared about other, even if it's not about Lu tribe, but I think go back 1955 or whatever, all the tribe concern of standing of the people who they cannot speak them right. In a more specific of education and to be open mind.
He was taking care of everybody.
Yeah, and yeah. He almost cared about other. And one other thing, he will have you came to him house, you can stay 3 months without to pay anything, but he would tell you after 3 months, you have to be a decision of your life. You're going to have a job or you're going to have education. He cannot help you forever.
I love that idea that you have someone in your village that you could really go to for help.
Yeah.
And really stay with when you're in need.
Yeah, for 3 months, but he feeds you, give you all the instruction, but he still go back to you, ask you two things very important. Are you willing to go to school or are you willing to have a job? If you need a school, he would find a way to help you to get to school because you can help others. If you need a job, he would try to get you a job.
Wow. And what was expected of you as the child of the tribal chief?
A lot of time people thinking to be a child of the leadership is just you're going to get everything, piece of cake. But I was different from that because I was watching with my grandpa, dad, and my dad. He listened more than he tell people what to do.
Two ears, one mouth.
That's correct. That's what's up.
Wow, what if all leadership listened more than they spoke?
I think make more sense. And other thing, I have a little idea about listening. It's like, remind me about psychology. The body language is something different, but when people speak, it's something different.
Yes, it's not just the words.
No, it's not just the word.
Mm-hmm. When you were a child, what did you think your life would be like when you grew up?
My big challenges was I love to be a lawyer, but my daddy never helped me to be in that part. But he almost thinking I'm good to be a mechanic. And I think he's right because when I was little, I liked to play with car. And when I see a lawyer and he see what I play, he almost say no. But I did a mechanic, and still have a passion of care about other thing. I mean, still I can say I'm a lawyer in other way, because if you can look at the challenges when I meet people and I can give them thinking wisely, I will organize them. And I almost say, I don't give money, but I'll teach you how to be better.
Nice.
Yeah, I think I got from mechanic law, and I get some from the law.
Yes, you may have two very strong interests, right? Your mechanics and your people organizing.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever anticipate that you would that Sudan would split into two separate countries when you were a kid? Did you feel that growing tension?
For one reason, through my parents, I know Sudan to have a peace, you have to be separate. One of the things make me to say that, I think is a result of when one group in the power, they try to eliminate the other group to be like a second citizen, it will create a hatred in other way. We're supposed to be one equal citizen. But when one nation have two different citizens in the same nation, in the long term, it will affect to be separate.
So have you been back to Sudan since its separation in 2011?
After I left Sudan, I never go back. I went only was 2011. That's like 26 years. I was all my life, I would say. But I spent 2 months, but I enjoyed it because when I went, and I was happy to say this, I'm not coming to change you guys, but I'm coming to see what you have, and I can accept whatever you have.
Here in the United States.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing to me about that is I think you've been going all over the world wondering what different people do. I understand this is your 26th nation you visited?
Yeah.
Lived
the,
in?
Yeah. The one thing I can be honest with you, I learn a lot, but the only skill I learn, people they don't look at when they have a country or a nation, they don't ask themselves how this nation became better. They're just thinking, because I came here in the America example, I got everything I want. But they never question mark of how this nation became better. And I think I wish if everybody go to any nation, they have to look at the what they have. And I think that's one of my message to people who've been around. And at the same time, they're easy to compare. It's like if I go back to South Sudanese community. South Sudan is only 2 years old or three. But some people compare South Sudan with America. I don't think it's going to work because South Sudan is just a baby.
It's the comparison doesn't
work. Right.
Yes. Maybe they're looking for inspiration.
They do, but they gotta have a common sense. For me, if Americans have depended on 1776, that taught me close to 200 years old, that's went through process to get. I can put an example. When I was in South Sudan, I went to my cousin's store. He was not expecting me to be online. He was just thinking I have to jump. But I said, no, where I came from, we learned to have to be disciplined. If somebody in the line, you need to follow up who we face.
Oh, he didn't expect you to wait in line.
Yeah.
Yes, but you, of course, wanted to.
I was trying to stay in the line.
And I
know it's my cousin's store, but I grew out. Site.
Yeah, so even with permission to go to the head of the line,
right.
You'd prefer to be one with the people.
Yep.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Makes sense for who you are, too.
Yeah.
When you look back to your days in Sudan, what do you miss? Do you have smells or foods or just a piece of the culture that you long for?
Yeah, really, I can say I miss the food, and I miss a friend of my or group of my colleagues who were thinking in the better way. But we divide now because it's about the struggle, about, you know, there's people who born in this life, when they're in the place, they cannot feel to be is putting time in the family or society. They feel like they have to go a different area. They can speak up or they can do a different. I miss back in the day when I was growing up in the school.
So everybody wants to put their own special spin on it rather
right.
than just keep
right.
the program going. I think we see that in our schools.
Right.
Constantly coming up with new programs.
Right. Yeah. It's change is something good, but you gotta put time on it, and you gotta have how to present that. And I believe all people in the world, they love to have a change, but sometimes they don't know how the change came.
Can you tell me about the food that you do miss in South Sudan? What were you eating
there? Well, we're eating like a rice with beef, and the way they cook it is like kind of green pepper of Spidey and all that for Africa. It was really amazing when I was back in the day.
I would miss that too. Yeah. It sounds really good.
Yes.
You're listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USNM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us today, welcome. Today I'm visiting with my guest, Tony Bazia. Bazia has co-authored a couple of books, and recently he and his friend Ann Smith were able to capture his stories and philosophies in a book called Chocolate Boy. I wonder, Bazia, what made you want to write this book, and why do you think people might like to read it?
The first thing, when you have accept who you are and you know your purpose of life, you love to share that purpose in the life. And the only way I was suspected is through the writing, because writing is like a singer, a magician. He can write a song, but he can sing it, and that song can go out. So I was feeling I'll give what I know for my parents and to share with others. That was one of the purpose of Chocolate Boy.
And who do you think is the target audience? Who's most going to enjoy this book, Chocolate Boy?
Really, I'm thinking about the young generation who they don't have a chance the way I have. And I'm thankful for a chance I have my parents. But I want to give hope for others who doesn't have a chance what I have, but they can do better if they look out the box.
I loved the book. I read it cover to cover in a weekend and really enjoyed every bit of it. I would highly recommend it to our listening audience, and I have linked to it on our website. So I hope if you're interested in Chocolate Boy, you'll follow up on the website. I wondered if you would tell us about maybe a favorite passage from the book. What part do you enjoy the most?
The most, when I went to the village, when my parents sent me away to be in the different parents in the village, and I was more happy to be there. And I think one of the things was about between me and my mom, we are not really understanding each other, because my mom thinking I have to be like one of my brother. And she almost said, oh, you don't look like my child. But I said, Mom, still, I'm your child. When came a chance to be going away, they was thinking, if I'm just acting where I live, where I'm just going to be somebody to be able, even if they put me in a different situation, that I'm going to be handled. And I was excited to go for that family. And even for the 3 months, we did a lot, I believe I can say that.
This was my favorite part of the book, too, interestingly. You were just 9 years old, is that correct?
That's right.
And your parents were concerned. You weren't turning out like the other chickens. You were turning out more like a goose, right?
Right, and that's correct.
They weren't sure if you were
really
someone who was going to run away or someone who was just thinking differently.
That's correct.
So they sent you to live with a very, very poor
family.
Mm. Where you toiled in the fields alongside of them.
That's right.
In the heat.
In the heat. And mosquito and all that. So.
That could be maybe the best gift a parent could give to a child. To go see how it can be different.
Yeah.
So you can appreciate what you do have and appreciate others.
That's correct.
Fascinating. Was that a practice other families did?
I'm not sure, but it depends on whatever the parents look at the child to give him a chance to be mature or to be able to make a difference what they have or what they don't have. I think that was kind of a good example.
When you were growing up, were you speaking Arabic?
Yeah, I did Arabic for one reason, because my daddy went to school in English. And one of the things, he put me in Arabic to help him in the movement of what he's standing for, to have a second chance, somebody from his family know Arabic better. That's the reason my dad took me. And then in the half, I went to school in English a little bit. But my profession is always Arabic.
And you write in Arabic?
Yeah, I write on reading, and then I teach people in the better way, open mind.
Yeah. So when it came time to writing this book, English is not your first language. So you partnered with Anne, is that correct?
That's correct.
And how did you all meet?
I met through the school, the school down here they call learning program. I'm a person. I went to. I can speak good, perfect. My reading is not strong, but I was need a small gift because in Arabic you read from right to left. In English, from left to right. Sometimes there's understand when I write some stuff, but I can read some stuff. There's some stuff I'm not. So that's the way we met to approve my reading better.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm doing better. I can be thankful for Honest Me.
And it's Learning Works?
Yeah.
Is where you met? That's nice. And so you told your stories to Anne, and she wrote them in a format that was a book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She did a great job with it. It's very readable, very usable. So you work as a mentor at the high school with students and seem to draw on some of the principles you outlined in the book. And I wonder if you can tell us about your work with Bright Future and how you got involved with that program.
The purpose of Bright Future came up through what I do in the juvenile facility in South Poland. The new migrant who get to the United States, some of them have good chance to have somebody to guide them in their life. And some of them they don't. The purpose, how to make them the good citizen of the bright future. That's the purpose of we create this program. And one of the things, to tell them about the story about United States. And one of the things, almost I said, we used to have that back in the day in Africa. They say, if you go to the party, don't dance. Sit down and watch how people dance.
Oh.
So I'm trying to teach them how to fish, not to just handle them stuff.
So the children you're working with are high school students who are all immigrants, is that correct?
Yeah, high school students, all immigrants.
Are they all refugees coming from war?
Depend. Some of them are refugees, some of them asylum, because the process to get to the United States in a more different process. It can be asylum, it can be a lottery. So it's a different process to get to the United States. Sometimes they will have a visit to the United States and then they apply for asylum.
I can't imagine a more important place to have a mentor because there's so much to sit down and watch and you can't figure it all out just by watching people dance. Sometimes people have to show you some moves and where to go to learn some moves.
I know. It's like when they got here, they're almost thinking because I know English, I know everything. But the language is something else, but the life is something else. I'm given two skills, I can be honest. It's like I know you know how to read, but you can't compare where you came from Africa to United States. If you look at it, even between United States and Africa, 7 hours, forget about what's the difference they do.
Just the time zone.
The time zone.
Right.
That's learned me something.
Mm-hmm. You have to let go of the old.
Yeah.
And just see what is here and what you can
right.
do with what you've brought
you
to
don't
the
have.
World.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's another big project you focus your time and attention on, and that's called Project Bazia. I wondered if you could tell us about the mission of your project.
The mission really is about South Sudanese Pacific after they became a nation, and I tell everybody, nation is not a flag, but it's about to teach them and to organize them in the discipline and respect it. And I'm standing off how they can be a good citizen in the United States, and they can be a good citizen in South Sudan, and they can be a good citizen in the world. That's the mission of Project Bazia. We work with the kids, we do leadership, and right now, after my book, we have 2 books already out. And the first book about South Sudan history was something amazing. We compare United States and South Sudan. If I say the land of South Sudan is like Texas, and we compare the cowboy to just like those tribes in South Sudan, Dinka, Nuer, Toposo, Latuka, these people who raise cow. But the only difference between Texas or cowboy and South Sudan is the cowboy, they change the way they're thinking of raising the cow or all this issue because that gives them better life. And I wish what I do through the project to give a chance for others to be doing better.
I think these books you've created with Anne are wonderful teaching tools and resources.
It's very important. If I say it like me, I love this country. This is one of the things you see me with American flag because when I was 9 years old, I tell my dad, my dream to come to the United States to be an American citizen. The first thing he say, oh, but yeah, you're crazy. But I say, Dad, if God exists, one day I'll be here. I was here and then even in the New York time when it happened, 9/11, I was there. There's the people who were there, they just want to have the American flag to show they are American. It was not easy. But Alan, sometimes bad things happen, but you would teach somebody else. Like me, to be here was no accident for me. It was a big plan.
Sounds like a calling.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I can put it that way.
So you're kind of known for your bandana, which is American flag that you wear on your head. And when did you start wearing that?
Since I get in this country, because one of the things, somebody got to push it. This country is great because America is a multicultural. America gives chance for everybody. This is one of the things sometimes, if you ask yourself, why everybody want to come to the United States? If there's nothing better here, they cannot just come. They cannot just throw themselves. If you look at the Mexico, they cross the border. Sometimes they die before they get to the United States. That show me something. If really, you know, when I look at those two things, for me, I believe somebody got to say thank you.
So that's what you're saying with your, yeah, with your wearing the head.
It's not against the law, but it's about love something. You, when you love, love it doesn't have a color. That's a good thing when you say love.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like for you to tell us a little bit about what you're dreaming for your future. I know you're a person who's very connected to your dreams. You dreamed to come to the U.S. when you were 9. What are you thinking is next in the next 5, 10, 20 years?
5, 10, 20 years, my big dream is I will connect myself with those big leaders in the world. I can say Abraham Lincoln is my favorite, Nelson Mandela, I would say Martin Luther King, I would say John Kennedy. Those, all these guys was very important in the world of, you know, in the level of United States. And I will learn to give what they know in through writing, through agonize the nation and the world. That's my big dream. But I will try the best. I never limited my dream, but I hope the best I can do.
This idea of not limiting your dream, not everybody talks about that. Could you explain what you mean by that?
Okay. One of the things, sometimes we like people thinking God have us in the first place to just born in this world, go to school, get a wife, get a kids. I don't believe that. There's more than that. And especially when you try to figure out what's the purpose to be in the life. And I'm happy every single day in the life to be in the life. If I have a purpose, I have to do my best. Because I put it like, if Eve and Adam, they was in a good place and they mess up, what about us?
I think I had met you before I read your book. And then as I read your book and I learned about how your father would listen to the tribal others, right. tribesmen, about their concerns and help them. And that you were allowed to sometimes listen in on that and the conversations with that. I think you were powerfully influenced by your father's role. And it seems to me a bit of a calling for you, too. Just from what I can observe, you have this willingness to listen to others and ability to help people clarify their own goals.
That's right. Because if we care about each other, we make different. And that's why God created us to be people. When you say people, no color. It's like sometimes when I tell people, nobody chooses to be white or black or yellow. But you never thought about, okay, if whatever I be in this community or whatever, why not do your part and then you will see the other? But we never did that. We point finger and 3 finger coming back to us. Mm-hmm. I wish if somebody asking me, I'm happy to answer. But it's hard for me to point finger for somebody else.
You say in the end of your book that you like to have unlimited call plans on your cell phone because you have up to 200 calls a day. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do. I connect with the kids over the world in the United States. One of the things, a child needs hope and encouragement. And I never missing the value because even me, I was a child before I became a man or whatever you put it. If I can listen to the child, I can be who I am today because that's give me more respect the way I connect myself with the kids. I almost give them a chance to reach me because I can solve the issue of what they're thinking next move. And the child almost needs somebody to be somewhere to believe on that child. It doesn't matter if it's good or bad because I believe nobody born bad. But things happen. If we don't help them, how are we going to make a difference?
And we all need to see other people like ourselves doing something that is exciting to us.
That's correct.
And I think in that way you end up being a mentor and a role model for a lot of young people.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you for being willing to ask those questions and listen. I think you're an educator at heart.
But this is why when I tell people, when people say I have a master's degree, I have all this big thing, sometimes I make a joke. I tell them, look, I never been in school, but I'm more educated in a simple way, because local education is not a certificate. It's the daily life, how you look at the life and how you operate with people. That's the way I can say, oh, Bazir really is educated. But if I have this big degree in the world and I'm not doing nothing, I'll be like, yo, what are you talking about?
It's kind of like you have a PhD in humanity.
Right. Yeah.
You are also educated, though, aren't you?
I see the education for me when I speak other in the simple way. I feel that's my big impact of education. And accept people who they are. And I think that's my big key of life.
That's the simple. The simple life is wondering who you are and how you can make a difference.
That's right.
Yeah. Bazir, you have said, I never limit my dreams, and that actually takes a lot of courage. And I think you're a wonderful example of someone who dreams big and inspires other people to do the same. Thank you for coming on this show today and for sharing your story.
Thank you again.
And thank you for listening. Please join us each Sunday from noon to 12:30 for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Bazir. You've been listening to New Mainers Speak. We will close today's program with some music that Bazir has selected for us. Can you tell us a little bit about Emmanuel Kembe?
Emmanuel Kembe, I can compare by Bob Mwaling, because Kembe is standing of the movement of South Sudan. He almost is standing of the people of South Sudan and educate them through his music.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is called Freedom.
Freedom.